Good evening. Welcome to The Pipeline. This is the Western Standard's weekly panel show where we'll dissect and break down the most important issues that have been breaking in the news throughout the course of the week. I'm Corey Morgan, one of the columnists at the Western Standard, and I'm joined by a couple other panelists who I'll get to quickly. But first, let me speak about our sponsor, as it's important to pay the bills as well. That's how we stay independent, and that's the Canadian Shooting Sports Association. They're a great sponsor. They've been with us for quite some time now. If you own firearms, you plan on owning firearms, you want to use them for hunting, collecting, doesn't matter. It's your business. That's one of the problems we have. You shouldn't have to justify it. But you should be a member of this group because there are people trying to take away your right to have those firearms. And if you don't fight back, you will lose them. Check them out. It's the Canadian Shooting Sports Association. All kinds of resources. A fantastic website. CSSA-CILA.org. Take out a membership with them, guys. It's well worth it. All right. Tonight, I'm joined. I'll start nearest to me here with our opinion editor, Nigel Hannaford. Hi, Nigel. How's it going?
It's going very well. I was really surprised to see you locked eyes with Mr. Trudeau through the television there. You were totally into what he was saying over there at Sate, weren't you?
I was trying to find some wax I could put into my ears or something to stop that.
Borrow some from Dave.
Cutting voice of his, but yeah, he has a special place in my heart, that's for sure. All right, well, we'll talk about him soon as well. We got our news editor, Dave Naylor. How's it going?
Good, Corey. Looking forward to bloviating with you.
Bloviating, yes.
Is that the right use of the word?
Bloviating, that would be it. We will go on and
you okay, though? You seem a little tight around the collar this morning.
I'm strangling with this darn collar extender. Did break on me. So, yes, folks, I'm turning a little purple. That's what it's about. I have a thick neck to support that swollen head of mine. And, well, my button's a little tight tonight. So that's fine. We'll get through. But if I pass out, that's all it's about.
First world problems.
Yes. All right. So, well, we were honored in Calgary today. We had a meeting with Prime Minister Trudeau came in and gave an audience to our Premier, Dave. What's the story here?
Yeah. So if you remember the last time, it was a month or so ago, he came here and Danielle Smith did not have a meeting and she was a bit perturbed. So she heard Trudeau was coming to town and she asked for a meeting and did in fact get one on Wednesday morning. Down in the Eau Claire area. She laid her cards on the table, said she wanted to tell Trudeau face-to-face that he should fire Environment Minister Stephen Guilbeault, talked about projects that needed to go ahead, talked about the carbon tax and how seven premiers are now against it, come out united against it. Trudeau left the meeting, went up to Sate, where he had a press conference mainly on the dental programs, but of course, the media didn't want to talk about that. They wanted to talk about the carbon tax. And Trudeau went on an impassioned plea about climate change and trying to change the world and was not going to budge, was not going to fire Stephen Guilbeault. If Danielle Smith can't get along with him, she's going to have to change the way she acts. Our own Sean Poulser was able to ask the prime minister, you know, does he still intend on throwing Scott Moe in jail for Saskatchewan's refusal to collect the carbon tax. And he just says he expects every Canadian to obey the law. And then the prime minister was off to a senior citizen's home to bother people during their lunch hour this afternoon. So Daniel Smith zoomed back to Edmonton, had a press conference, and basically said the same thing, that she made her case. Prime Minister made his case, but it was good that she was able to have some face time.
I mean, credit where due. Last time he was criticized for not having sat down with the premier. He gave her time this time. And, you know, as we expected, I don't think much productive came out of it. But they did chat. I mean, it's quite the line in the sand or the hill to die on. I mean, they're not going to back off on this carbon tax.
Possibly. I don't know. Seven premiers against it and most of the public against it as well. I wouldn't be surprised if they, I wouldn't be totally surprised if they backed away from it or said it would be delayed 3 months or something like that. It would be a concession to make if they wanted to make one. But I must admit, I'm a little puzzled about why this meeting happened. He says that 1.3 million senior citizens in Canada are signed up for this dental program. So this is obviously not a new initiative. So why would you come to Calgary to recycle something that is already out there, unless it was for a different reason? And the different reason would be perhaps to demonstrate resolve in the face of Western intransigence. Maybe it's something like that, or to remove the stigma of having turned down a meeting with the Premier of Alberta a month ago. I mean, who knows? But there didn't seem to be a lot of reason for him to come here to do what he did. So what's really going on?
Yeah, well, I mean, it feels almost, it's been this way for a while, as if they're doing campaign-style stops. I mean, they're kind of crossing the country and making announcements in different areas. Usually it's been housing. This time, they wanted to regurgitate the seniors' dental plan that was going on, but certainly not worthy of a stop on its own, you would think. But, I mean, I doubt it indicates an election's coming sooner.
I look, by the way, at what they have on their website about the dental plan. It's very hard to tell what it would pay for and whether you'd be better off with the government's dental plan if you've already got one through your retirement, union, whatever, you know. But hard to say. There are no details. It's not coming in until November of this year. And I guess we'll have to wait and see.
He picked friendly territory today. He's with Calgary Liberal MP George Sahal in Northeast Calgary, and he was effusive with his praise for MP Sahal. But I'm just taking a little step back. I'm kind of agreeing with Nigel. Remember last week the Liberals cut their alcohol tax that was going up. They cut it in half because of the outcry. So it would not surprise me to see some sort of reduction in the carbon tax. As you say, seven premiers, including Liberal ones, have all come out against it, a united front, massive, you know, that's huge. So Doug Ford yesterday said Trudeau will get annihilated at the polls because of this carbon tax. So, you know, we always say he's not a stupid man, so maybe he'll do some sort of concession where he'll still bring it in April 1st, but instead of this level, it'll be at a lower level.
Maybe he's a little bit stupid, expecting people to believe that the carbon tax rebate checks that they receive are actually more than what they're paying for the carbon tax.
Well, he's counting on us to be stupid anyways.
When yeah, saying you know, I don't know whether you've done the exercise of going through your bills and just, you know, batting it all up. I mean, you're down in Prittis Creek, you're cold there. Your power bills must be through the roof. So
the old log place, it's not the cheapest spot to heat or drive.
So there
to,
you yeah. go. It's I know that in our household, it's not quite a wrap. We pay more. But what he does not ever mention or concede is that the effects of the carbon tax are felt through the entire economy, because everything you buy, everything you own, comes by a truck. When you are paying those fees on things that do 8 miles to the gallon, diesel fuel percentage, right? That's a lot of money. And so he talks about how they want to fight inflation. Well, the inflation he wants to fight is a consequence of two things. One, his own reckless spending and borrowing to finance it. And the second thing is his damned carbon tax, which is not a tax on pollution. It is a tax on plant food.
Well, so, I mean, if they did decide to try and make some sort of concession on this, I mean, they have to be careful with it. When he did his clumsy effort to make a cut for the Atlantic provinces, you know, because his support was dwindling down there when the tax started applying to them. I mean, the rest of the provinces smelled the blood in the water. That's really what brought the rush to push this. So, I mean, if they're going to back down there, they're going to have to.
Well, his answer to that was that, well, this applies to the whole country, but I don't know. How many people do you think are still heating their homes in oil in Alberta?
Yeah, I think the count was like less than a couple dozen.
There's a couple of cottages in Pigeon Lake or something.
But as Nigel says, this carbon tax is one of the root causes of inflation. It goes from the farmer to the supplier to the restaurant. They're all charging more because of that carbon tax. And the Bank of Canada has said, we're not lowering the interest rates while inflation is so high. And now because that's going to crush a lot of Canadians who will lose their homes because of their increased mortgage payments. There's no doubt about it. They will lose their homes. And why he can't see that the carbon tax is an inflationary thing is beyond me. Well, I guess he doesn't worry about fiscal.
Probably not.
He says he doesn't have a monetary policy.
Yeah. Judy, my wife Judy says to me, we're going shopping on Thursday night. This thing hits on April the 1st. Prices will go up. We're laying in supplies. So
good idea.
Not a bad idea if you can afford it. I don't know.
Always fill up your car on March 31st.
Yeah.
Well, and I had Franco Terrazano from the Taxpayers Federation on the show last week, and he talked about that. You know, they really plug all those tax hikes into April 1st. It's just that kind of spring, you know, you open the door and enjoy the spring weather and hopefully forget what they're about to do to your pocket.
And guess who's getting raises April 1st?
Yes.
MPs, Canadian MPs, and
and the Governor General.
And Justin himself and the Governor General.
All don't call it raises. April Fool's Day for nothing, do they?
No. I wonder if we're getting raises April 1st.
Oh, gee, maybe that's why Derek bailed today. And here you are.
Yes, we're going to bring up the raise.
Won't hold my breath. I'm trying with this damn tie. All right. Well, let's move on. Speaking of bloviators, and one of the kings of them is Nahed Nenshi. You knew he couldn't stay in the sidelines forever, Dave. He's back.
Yeah? He is back and running for the leadership of the NDP. Very, very interesting. He's never been a party politician before. We've always suspected he's left wing, but, you know, he never came out and supported a party, even though he was a good fan of Trudeau. And I think probably hoped to be appointed to the Senate by Trudeau, but that hasn't happened. So his ego now says, okay, I'm going to become the premier of Alberta. And I start by becoming the leader of the NDP. And I think, as you tweeted this week, you know, it's going to be good fun now with Nenshi. And he started out by calling Danielle Smith immoral and dangerous and, you know, every name in the book that he can think of. And the premier didn't rise to the bait, and she said, you know, when whoever the NDP pick, I'll be happy to debate the left on on their policies versus my policies.
But, on their policies, you know, not on their personalities.
Exactly.
And characteristics.
Exactly. Mr. Nenshi's always had the problem of he thinks he's the smartest person in the room, and he's never been able to play well with people. If you remember, the Calgary Council had to call in a psychiatrist to get them all together and see how they could work. So how he operates under a party tent is going to be very interesting.
Well, I think that's is going to be interesting. It is going to be a bit difficult because you have in this contest for the leadership, a number of people have conspicuously paid their dues. I mean, I don't think any of us around this table have much use for NDP policies, but you can respect the fact that somebody like Kathleen Ganley or Sarah Hoffman, Gil McGowan, they have been in the party for decades. They have worked hard. They've done what it takes. They've got elected, in the case of Ganley and Hoffman, held ministerial positions. And then suddenly there is this idler on the sidelines who shows up. I got a new columnist, a young Connor Hall. He had a column on this morning, and I'm pumping it a little, but he makes the point, all of a sudden you've got this person from the sidelines who says, oh, I think I'd like to be the leader of the NDP. Well, just a minute, sir, are you a member? Well, I joined yesterday. Oh, well, welcome to the NDP. I don't know that that's going to go well, and the personality type that Dave has described, it's just going to make it that much more difficult if he ends up winning the big prize. But I'm not sure that he will. NDPers are, one good thing about them is they're quite loyal.
Well, it is going to be interesting to watch. I mean, if there was going to be an outside interloper to come in and take things over, you would think it would have to be a bridge builder then, you know, a conciliatory type of person, a team member. And that's anything but what Nahed Nenshi is. Nahed Nenshi is about Nahed Nenshi.
Mm-hmm.
And he's going to have to learn how to temper his attitude.
You should never underestimate Nahed Nenshi.
No.
He has won three elections as mayor of Calgary. The first one was shocking. The next two, not so shocking. But then he'd step down. His popularity was on the way down. He loves the Olympics. I think he goes to most of the games personally and tried to get them back in Calgary. And that was opposed, and citywide referendum clearly shot it down. So he was not overly highly thought of when he left office in Calgary. He left a record of increased taxes for businesses and homeowners. So, but he has an organization. Some video of him in a room last night that was just full of people waiting to sign up as volunteers for him.
Really?
So he's got the ground game, certainly, and you don't underestimate.
Oh, no, he could win this leadership race. I mean, it's a one-member, one-vote system they have now, and I'm certain he's got that ground game selling those memberships like crazy. It's the day after the leadership that might be interesting if he won it. Because then again, now you've got some seriously ruffled feathers. You've got, a divided party, which is very possible in this. You think of Gil McGowan. He's one of the ones to be running against him. Gil's got a guaranteed seat at the board level with the NDP. It's built in with the Alberta Federation of Labor. And if those two are clashing, and Nitschke's the leader and Gil's on the board, but that party's going to have some
very... Isn't that what the UCP has been going through for
last... Well, kind of, exactly, yeah.
So who's going to be the David Parker of the left?
Yes, good point.
Take back the NDP. Yes.
The question I would have to him is, okay, Naheed, you're going to take a run at it, you finish a close second. Are you going to run for the NDP in the next provincial election? Are you going to try and seek a seat? Interesting to see what he says, he's willing to stick around and play the long game.
That would be a good way to corner him. I mean, and whether he would answer honestly, I'd find it very hard to believe that Nahed Nenshi would stay with that party in any role other than the leader.
No, and he's got an easy escape for that question. He could just say, well, I'm only focused on the leadership right now. Well, whatever comes will come. So,
I mean...
You've covered too many press conferences, Dave.
A few.
Know the answers before the questions
are
asked. Yeah, well, the other part with not underestimating him as well. I mean, Calgary is the battleground. And the number of seats that, really only had to turn over a handful to change the outcome of this election, people's memories are short. They might forget just how much they retired in Nenshi before by the time the next election rolls around. He could be the one that could turn it
around. Your job to remind them, sir.
Oh, I will. You know that.
Yeah, and you're right. I mean, he would have no chance in the rural areas. I couldn't see Nenshi showing up on a ranch in his purple cowboy boots, or yes, orange now, cowboy boots. So, the NDP will probably hang on to Edmonton because they're a government town, union town. So, yes, we'll all come back down to Calgary and whether people have long memories.
There's one thing. Municipal elections are, the turnout is low. The provincial elections, more people care. Do you think that would work in his favor or would be a problem for him? My bet is that it would be a problem.
Good question.
It could be. I mean, it's apathy that keeps those municipal leaders in. Even when their public support goes down, they keep getting reelected because, we're lazy. I mean, I can't stand them, so what I'll do is stay home, watch TV rather than vote against them.
Yeah.
But you can't count on that on a provincial level. People will get up and mark their ballot.
Yeah, and the Premier's office is reportedly salivating at the thought of Naheed winning. They've got a couple more years, certainly, to prove what they say is working. And if things are going well at the end of Smith's mandate, it doesn't really matter who's leading the NDP. Smith will get reelected.
Well, just the final thing, has he ever come out of the gates swinging? He's always held back. He's had a sharp tongue, I guess you could say. But people have often complained that it's gotten so negative, so polarized. I just would have thought with his political instincts, maybe he would try to come out in being a little more...
Didn't work for Notley in the last campaign, did it?
Well, she wasn't exactly positive in that campaign.
Yeah, I mean, she ran a negative campaign.
Yeah, right? And then she, the last 2 days, is holy cow, as you said, he's been calling Premier Smith everything in the book already. The
difference is that Notley was already in the secure place. He needs his entry into the race to be noticed, and you do that by being a bit over the top.
Well, I guess when he's got a party that could turn their support against him. He doesn't want to campaign against the other candidates so much as he wants to campaign against Premier Smith. Because if he starts shooting at Gill or Ganley or any of them, that's not going to be well received by a lot of the party loyal.
All of a sudden, with Nenshi and McGowan, I'm looking forward to the NDP debates.
Oh, I really.
I mean, it was going to be. I wasn't even going to bother before, but hey, I'll tune in now. So at least it's good for the NDP. They're getting some good publicity out of it, anyways.
Well, they're getting that, and as I said, with the debates, just the first time Nenshi will do his patented eyes closed and up in the air and talking down to Gill and sort of patting him in the head across the room. We might see a blow up like he had with Arthur Green, former reporter.
Yes, I'm sure Nico could pull up that photo if he wanted to.
There's one thing Mr. McGowan has, it's a very short fuse.
And a very long middle finger.
Yes. Okay, well, we'll be watching. He'll be giving us lots of fodder to chew on for quite some time because that race isn't done until June. So, off
good
we
fun
go.
For months.
So, getting into the bigger, a little more broader. Jordan Peterson in the news, warning us of AI and big government.
Yeah, he was down in Washington speaking to Congress. Some pretty scary stuff, Big Brother type stuff, and warned that it's, state surveillance is going to become a thing. I think our columnist Linda Slobodian pointed out there's 700 million CCTV cameras in China, and they're basically watching everybody. And all of these moves towards digital economy, digital money, digital this, digital passports, digital that, it's becoming a lot easier for the governments to spy on it. And Peterson sounded the warning.
This actually, I'm glad he did it. I'm glad he said what he said, and I'm glad he made the warning. But we have actually been watching this mushroom grow at our feet for more than 20 years. This idea of a digital ID, which it all really hinges on, like we know where you are, what you watch, we've got your driver's license number, your healthcare number, your firearms number, every other.
They're already carrying it.
Yeah.
Your bank account number.
But this started in BC back in about 2002. And their objective, which was just step one of a much grander plan, was to put all the government information on one card, which has now, of course, evolved into one, if you want to carry it on your phone, one scan that just tells you everything about you. But it wasn't supposed to stop there, and it didn't. The next thing was that Alberta became integrated, and the two provinces are now integrated with the federal government. Your Alberta card, if you have one, will give you access to your federal accounts, EI, tax, whatever you need to deal with the federal government about. So you now got two provinces and one federal government with access through one card. This whole thing is being put together by one of those organizations that you're never ever going to do a story about, because the name itself is like a long drink of warm water. It's something about the Canadian Bankers Association is in on it, and if you really like the World Economic Forum, well, they're in on it too. You can never find these things quickly when you're too well prepared, can you? But anyway, suffice it to say that there is, and here we are, it's called the Digital Identification and Authentication Council of Canada. And that brings together the BMO, Canada Post, CIBC, Desjardins, Forge Rock, Government of Canada, Interact, Manulife, provinces of British Columbia, New Brunswick, Ontario, SecureKey, Toronto Dominion, TELUS, that was 2 years ago when I wrote that. Now there are probably more. And when you have got your banks and your governments and some of the service companies working together to get all of your digital identification on one chip, I say that trusting that system is asking too much of people, and Peterson nailed it. He said they're coming together, and there's only one loser in this game,
Well, it's frightening, but I can see the inevitability of it. I can see how we're giving away our identity and freedom for the convenience. I mean, it's nice to be able to just go in and tap your card. It's
and that is that's the appealing thing about it. I mean, you can make the case. Gosh, I've got a great thick, used to be somebody had a wallet like that. It was full of used non-sequential 20s. Not anymore. It's full of pieces of plastic. Why don't we just sort of have one? That's the selling point. And then, of course, from the point of view of governments, they could easily tell you, well, we deal in 50 million transactions every year between driver license renewals, EI claims, whatever. There's 40 million Canadians, and they've all got business with the government. Wouldn't it be easier? Wouldn't it be cheaper? Probably not, but it's...
Easier, maybe. Cheaper, easier, definitely not.
Maybe, but at any rate, these are the positive things. But the people at the top have complete control.
Yeah, when you're assuming the benevolence of government, you're fine, but I don't assume that.
Well, tell us again, what did they do during COVID? My memory's shot.
Yeah.
But something about bank accounts, wasn't it?
Yes, plus vaccine bank passports, actually. If you wanted your movement restricted, whether it was travel, whether it was going to a restaurant, even you had to show your phone after you'd done an online registration of yourself to show your medical status. But we're still continuing to give it away. And the inconveniences of government, my Alberta healthcare card. I mean, I had to go in for a driver's license physical because I got a class 4.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to pay for that out of pocket. So I go to a clinic. But my card had gone through the dryer. They wouldn't do it because I didn't have my Alberta healthcare card. Well, what do you care? It's printed on a piece of toilet paper, for crying out loud. I could go home and make another one if you like. It'll look just like it. But you see, these annoyances, you get people to say, we'll just pack it all into one little card.
Let me just play the devil's advocate. I'm not saying I agree with this because I don't, but... If you're a law-abiding citizen and you don't do anything illegal or anything wrong and just go about your life, what is there to, what's wrong? What's wrong with that?
Well, what's wrong there is that you may be subject to laws that you never contemplated. 5 years ago, would you have thought you would have had to show your phone to, the young lady who meets you at the door of the restaurant?
Nope.
But true. Then it became the law, and then you had to. How did you feel about that? I happen to know how you felt about that. I felt the same way. So what it means is that you sign up for one thing, and you end up getting given another. And by the way, if that wasn't the case, why does your liberty have to be predicated on the assumption that you're always going to agree with the government? Just because you're not doing anything wrong doesn't mean that you should be silent about when people want to know exactly what you're doing.
The bottom line is they've got most of the information anyways, right? From bank accounts to healthcare cards to, they've already got it.
Makes it just that much more convenient.
Yeah. Part of wondering if it's not, is the horse already bolted?
Exactly.
Like, can we put this toothpaste back into the tube? I mean, it gets astounding with what we see with AI, whether it's image generation or you take a picture of yourself and put it in the reverse image search on Google, and it will find, if you've got lots of pictures online, like I do, suddenly you'll have a whole lineup of other pictures of you because it recognized your face and pulled up all the other shots of you. It's already there.
Yeah, and I think that's the one thing we haven't talked about yet is AI and where that new technology is going to take us, because that is kind of scary.
Well, it might be the savior of us from the government. The AI might be smarter than our... I bow down to our authorities.
No doubt about that.
Artificial intelligence government now. Yeah, might do better.
Can't do worse.
But I mean, it is scary stuff. And I was glad Dr. Peterson brought it up. But I think he's kind of almost bringing it up after the fact. What can we do? How do we avoid this?
Well, it's a fair question, because this actually is a worldwide phenomenon. It's not like this is happening in Canada and nowhere else in the world. Which, of course, is why Peterson was down there talking to Congress about it. It's happening in the United States, happening in South Africa, Estonia, and China, we mentioned. This is something that has the blessing of the United Nations. I'm not going to fuss through the papers again, but if you challenge me to it, I could find the point where there was a UN resolution that said this is what we all need to do. And there again, the rationale was not something that you could just dismissed. They were saying there are a billion people in the world, and this was 10 years ago, a billion people in the world who do not have an identity. I mean, they may have a name, but they've got no way of proving who they are. They don't have a birth certificate. They don't, you know, so this was going to be something for a lot of people. This was a handy thing for somebody in an impoverished country who's born under unfortunate circumstances and does not have an identity. And let's face it, everybody deserves one. Doesn't mean that it's therefore acceptable to bring this in as a method of social control in this country or any other developed country. You asked the question of what to do about it. I was interested to see that 2 years ago, at least, as Alberta and British Columbia were moving ahead on this, the government of Saskatchewan said, well, take a pass. Now, I haven't checked to see what they've done since. But you're not going to turn the whole world back.
Well, they're interesting times. And I think at best at this point, we just have to be on guard. I mean, I'm not sure what else can turn this back. I mean, we're slaves to the convenience of it and the assumption of good intentions, which often is where these things always start. But
5 years from now, you're not going to be able to travel without a digital ID.
No, I can't see it. And
like trying to check in today into a hotel without a credit card. That's not the way we do things, sir.
Well, and it's a whole new world. I mean, you know, just for futurists and people to discuss and think about, but it's coming so fast. You think of every authoritarian regime or war-torn area. I mean, it's papers. Everywhere you go, you've got to present your papers. I remember in Guatemala in the late 80s, traveling there in the Civil War and checkpoints, papers. But now, your phone can transmit where you are at all times, and it's not that hard to legislate to say you shouldn't be without your phone.
Well, that was a thought. You're making the point about artificial intelligence, and I think it's worth just reminding people who may have heard the discussion last week about where the Canadian Online Harms Bill fits into all of this. You take all of this information and the ability of the artificial intelligence to know everything that you've ever said online. Put that together with legislation that allows somebody to go to a magistrate and say, I believe that that person is going to make a hateful statement based on what they've done in the past. And suddenly you find yourself under arrest, confined to your house with an ankle bracelet. If you're lucky, otherwise you're in jail. And you have not actually done anything. This is the World Minority Report. Thing is, you won't be able to do anything because with digital ID, if you decide to say, screw this, I'm off, I'm gone. Well, they know who you are. And when you try to buy a bus ticket or an airplane ticket, they know what you're doing, where you're going, and they'll meet you when you get there. You know, like the whole thing is, it's so easy to paint this bleak, bleak picture, the kind of thing that science fiction films were made of 50 years ago, but it's here.
It's not a stretch of the imagination
anymore. We're totally dependent upon the goodwill of the governments we elect.
Well, we better start paying attention to the governments we elect.
Or start electing liberals?
Oh, that must be it. Well, let's move on to another frightening aspect of government, I guess, and a little dreary again, but medical assistance in dying, and just keeps expanding and getting worse.
This was an awful case in Calgary this week that our Sean Polzer covered. It's about a 27-year-old woman who is autistic and ADHD and in constant pain, she says. So she wanted to commit suicide. She wanted to have made. And she got some Alberta Health Services doctor to sign off and say, yes, okay. Her father is now seeking a court injunction or an extension of an injunction to have the procedure stopped and to prevent his daughter from killing herself. The judge called it one of the most complex cases he's ever seen and says no doubt it'll end up in the Supreme Court of Canada. But really tragic case, and unbelievably, the father and daughter still live under the same roof. This is a woman who just fed up with life, does have some mental issues, there's no doubt about that, is in constant pain and cannot get a job. The judge himself said he's uncomfortable with overruling the decision of doctors. But this is where we're at. This is the whole argument today, Nigel, of made, and especially with mental health coming in.
Well, being a freedom advocate, I do have an initial difficulty with removing the agency of any person. This woman says she wants to do a certain thing, and she's of age. She should be able to, as long as it's legal, do what she wants. But who among us, having children, will stand back and watch them destroy themselves when it is in our power to do something about it? And this man, you're right, it's a complicated case, all right. But this man is doing what I hope any parent would want to do if their child was putting themselves in risk of their life, whether it was taking medical assistance in dying, whether it was trying to haul them back from the brink of addiction. People, just because somebody has passed the age of 18, may give them rights, but it doesn't remove the caring, affection, and the sense of responsibility that goes with being a parent. You can't help yourself. And frankly, wherever it's a matter of preserving life as opposed to ending life, the law should find a way to support the people who are trying to preserve life.
Well, and that's well said and covers a lot. And something that's happened with this maid, as people refer to it, it's gone so much farther beyond what the original advocates envisioned. It was Mike DeMore who put me in touch with a gentleman who was a lawyer for Sue Rodriguez, if we remember that case. Yes. Back in the 90s, and Sven Robinson. But she had a physiological debilitating condition. It was a death sentence. She was going to pass away anyways, and presumably without a very good quality of life for that period. I think most people at that point thought, okay, she's of sound mind and has an unfortunate, terrible disease, and she wants to choose how it's going to end. Perhaps that's what her ability should be able to do. And I spoke with that lawyer. I said, did you envision this being applied now to people with mental health issues? He said, no, of course not. And his name escapes me now. But, you know, that wasn't what they had in mind at all. That's a whole different ball of wax. I mean, you were talking about terminal people they were speaking of before, not somebody who's just, well, I shouldn't say just. I mean, mental health issues are very serious and debilitating, but that wasn't what they had in mind. And now when it's gone beyond into this, it adds a lot more question into whether it's a sound decision being made by the person.
You know, I want to just take us back 18 months to some work that was done by our friend and colleague, Linda Slobodian. There we had, she was made aware of a young man, 23 years old, who had diabetes and was not happy with life. And he found some quack in Toronto who was prepared to put him down. Only when Linda's story was published here and picked up by numerous other media voices did it get uncomfortable to be that doctor, and he withdrew from the case. We haven't kept up with this young man, but we do know that 3 months after he was supposed to have received medical assistance in dying, he was living in much happier circumstances with his grandparents, was busy about something, and had a girlfriend, and wasn't interested in medical assistance in dying anymore. Now, I don't know what the circumstances or the possibilities are for the young woman that we're talking about in this case. We would hope that she too would find some fulfillment somewhere that would just take the whole matter off the table. But while there is life, there is hope.
The maid statistics in Canada are quite staggering. We're leading the world in killing people.
Uh-huh.
And not just by a little bit, the growth is exponential. You know, thousands and thousands of people in Quebec alone.
Well, I think it was 15,600 or so last year. And sorry, in 2022, we don't have the three numbers yet. And it was 10,000 the year before. It had been 5,000 the year before that. So yes, an exponential growth.
You know, there's funeral homes in Quebec City that are setting up shop. You know, come to us. You can die here and be basically in your coffin already. I mean, it really is. It is frightening. And I think you're right. We're all fathers here. We'd do anything for our children, anything to keep them alive. What is the right? What is the right of an adult? When can an adult not make proper decisions? And I don't know if that's really up to somebody, a maid doctor or something. I'm not sure who makes that decision.
And as you said, I mean, and as the judge said, is it complicated and difficult? There will never be an easy answer to that one.
He says he wants to make a ruling quickly. This woman was scheduled to die April 1st. And he says, look, there's no point in appealing this. So, over years, because by that point, this woman will be dead. She'll have got her assisted suicide and appeals become meaningless. So, yeah, it's going to go through the court system quite rapidly, I think.
Yeah, and it's
tragic, tragic case.
This is something that's kind of always been there, but in the background, I mean, we've always kind of known the terminal cancer patient. His caregiver might leave the room and say, there's your morphine button. And, if you push it once, it'll make you comfortable. Be careful not to push it four times or it would give you an overdose. I mean, that did happen.
Mm-hmm.
It's more formalized kind of now. But,
I think the fact that the three of us are trying to have this highly emotive situation talked about in a dispassionate way, it's very hard. I think we need to say that very, very sympathetic to the individuals involved and the pain that they feel. Being in a mental frame where death looks like a good option is something that we need to feel enormous sympathy for. The father in the case have great empathy for somebody like that. But, they do say that hard cases make bad law. And in the end, preserving life has got to be the priority, because you can get a second chance to litigate this, but if somebody lives through the first court hearing, but you don't get a second chance, it's all over. And the precedent that this could set could be horrible.
Absolutely. Well, we'll watch and see. And just, we should err on the side of life when it comes to these things, in my view. But
just to be highly provocative, look at all the kids who are coming up with, they're getting their sex changed. They wait 5 years and suddenly find that this is terrible. There are already high suicide rates amongst people who've had sex change operations.
I thought we were going to go an entire show without talking about gender.
Sorry, Dave.
Sorry. Well, let's wrap it up just with a quick shot at our deputy prime minister. Certainly went and started a prairie fire, I guess.
She did. Prairie fire is very good. She was in Victoria unveiling some low-income housing. I think the cheapest rent was like $2,100 a month, so how anybody can afford that is beyond me. But she says, when she was in Victoria, she says, everybody on the prairie dreams of retiring to British Columbia. That would be their slice of heaven. Well, I got a lot of prairie people a bit upset with Ms. Freeland, including Tamara Leach, our Freedom Convoy leader, who said, my slice of heaven would be you being unemployed. So yes, she did anger a lot of prairie folks with that. But you know what? There are a lot of BC people now fleeing BC to come to Alberta. But Alberta doesn't have the lakes like the Okanagan does.
Well, I spent 25 years in BC, but the best years that I spent in BC were up in the Northeast, where you feel like you're in Alberta anyway. Port St. John, Port Nelson, all those places. I'm sure Miss Freeland was just making a little joke, and it's a silly joke, and it doesn't stand critical analysis. But I must say that by the time that I left British Columbia, I felt very, very differently after the dealing with the mentality on Vancouver Island. I remember driving up to come to the Calgary Herald in that old Chrysler that I had, and I got to the place by the highway with a big sign that says, "Welcome to Alberta." And I pulled over, switched the engine off, got out of the car, and I knelt down and I kissed the ground.
Your papal arrival. You know, I mean, my parents were lived and worked in Calgary for 40 years. And they retired to BC for one reason and one word only: winter.
Well, I mean, either way, every region of Canada has fantastic things about it and downsides to that. A lot of people take regional pride in where they're from. It was just foolish on the part of Freeland to try and make a quip, because you do insult people. Quick Dick McDick took a good rip at her as well, of course.
And Freeland's Alberta born, let's not forget.
Yeah, Peace River. Gosh,
yeah,
it's like
14-0. She, either way, was a ill phrased, but she should have known better. But we say that a lot about her.
Anything to turn around those dismal polls in BC for the Liberals.
Yeah, well, it certainly didn't help them any in Saskatchewan, Manitoba, or Alberta. But I guess they've got nothing.
Oh, you know, gents, we got bigger fish to fry with Miss Freeland than that. But it was a dumb thing to say.
Yeah, we'll take a poke at it while we can, anyways. Mm-hmm. Hey, if you love the prairies, you love the coast, whatever. It's just don't start splitting up when you're a politician. It's not a good idea. No. All right. Well, that's all the time we've got for today, guys. So thank you very much. We covered a lot of ground.
Was some good bovulating? Is that what it
was? Bloviating.
Yes. Some good bloviating.
We did plenty.
Yes. So, I thought you were the chief bloviator tonight.
Well, that's what it says on the business card.
Excellent.
All right.
Opinion editor.
Well, thank you guys, and thank all of you guys out there viewing and putting up with our bloviating. Be sure to pass it along to your friends and neighbors, and take out a subscription with the Western Standard. That's how we stay independent. Again, for those who subscribe, thank you very much. We really appreciate it. If you haven't yet, go on out there and get it. It's full of fantastic content and well worth it. We will see you all again at this time next week.
Canadian Shooting Sports Association. Without the CSSA, our gun rights would have been taken long, long ago. These guys are on the front lines, helping to draft smart and intelligent firearms regulations and legislation in Canada, and more importantly, educating the public about how we keep guns out of the hands of the wrong people. To become a member, it's absolutely worth every penny. You can become a Western Standard member for just $10 a month, or $99 a year for unlimited access.